Well, good afternoon, Juno. You're in tune with KTOO News. Pat Moore, your host today for Juno Afternoon. And we have a lineup of guests that should be really interesting today. Kevin Araki's coming in from the Alaska Vocational Resource Training Center. Odette Edgar will highlight Saturday's New England Barn Dance. Patrick Van Poel from Sequence Board Shop will be here to talk about a skate competition coming up tomorrow. And Ross Silkman will be joining us by phone from the Southeast Alaska State Fair offices over in Haines to tell us about the evening contest at the fairs. The weather, what a story. Look outside, Juno. Isn't that amazing? Well, for the rest of the day, mostly sunny, 68 to 74, west winds 10, partly cloudy for tonight, 46 to 52. Saturday, back up to mostly cloudy, but not a lot of rain. And then all the way through the week, to Tuesday at least, we're looking at the same kind of stuff. Occasional rain and sunshine.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Sean Atleo has been reelected as National Chief of Canada's largest Aboriginal organization, the Assembly of First Nations. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
When he was first elected a couple of years ago, it took 8 ballots before the more than 600 chiefs from across Canada finished voting. Even then, it was very close. This time, it took only 3 ballots before Atleo posted a convincing win, getting more than 200 votes more than his opponent. At his news conference in Toronto a day after the election, Atleo said First Nations are on the cusp of major transformative change. He also reiterated his key issues, resource development and economic sustainability.
It's about achieving action on rights. Major issues like resource revenue sharing. That is a way forward, is to support First Nations to become economically self-sustaining, to support and invest in the young people. The potential of the fastest growing segment of the Canadian population are First Nations youth.
Atleo also called for a national inquiry into the hundreds of dead or missing Native women across the country. He said when it comes to dealing with the government, he would stand up to protect the rights of his people. He now has another term to keep that pledge. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Leaders from Native communities are in Washington, D.C. this week discussing global warming. Matt Laszlo has more.
Representatives and citizens from several coastal communities packed into a theater at the National Museum of the American Indian to present their concerns about climate change. Rising sea levels present a specific threat to these coastal communities where natives are seeing their island paradises quickly shrinking away. Peter Apo is the trustee of the Office of Hawaiian Affairs and president of a cultural tourism firm. He spoke on behalf of Hawaii Senator Daniel Akaka, who was unable to attend.
Our Native communities will be particularly affected by these environmental changes. Our cultures are connected to our lands. As landscapes change and Native species migrate or perish, we risk losing our way of life.
The purpose of the event is to bridge cultural differences among the several communities in an effort to hash out real solutions to the growing problem. Apo says Natives need to work together to combat the problem.
So we must continue to focus on where the real root of the problem is and where the answers and solutions can be in gaining respect for Native knowledge and Native wisdom.
Attendees believe that a campaign to gain respect for the communities and to raise awareness of global warming will lead to a positive and visible change. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Fairbanks, Alaska plays host to the 52nd annual World Eskimo Indian Olympics this weekend. KUAC's Emily Schwing reports.
Most of the events at the World Eskimo Indian Olympics, or WEO, originate from Native Alaskan survival skills. The toe kick, for example, requires balance and control. Head official Sam Strange says these are the skills that come in handy for an ice fisherman.
This is an event kind of keeping great hand-foot coordination, be able to hop like from little iceberg across the ice. You have to be quick and nimble on your feet as you're going along is kind of the idea.
24-year-old Nick Hansen from Unalakleet tied the world record in the toe kick this year. He says he didn't train much himself, but he did help a friend get in shape for WEO.
That's what it's all about. You go out there and you just have fun together, and that's why we're here.
Athletes come from all over Alaska. For the second year in a row, a team from Greenland was invited. When it's time for the blanket toss, 50 men wearing gloves gather around a huge sealskin blanket. One, two, three, yells one man in Inupiaq, and they toss a tiny, rusty-haired woman into the air.
My name is Caitlin Pickett Bowl. I'm originally from Fairbanks, Alaska. When I get on the blanket, it's like my ancestor spirits are with me, and I definitely feel connected when I'm on that blanket.
And that's what the World Eskimo Indian Olympics is all about, connecting with old traditions like seal skinning and fish cutting, and gathering for new tests of strength, like the ear pull and the four-man carry. For National Native News in Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
On this day in 1980, San Ildefonso Pueblo potter Maria Antonia Martinez died. She was in her 90s and was famous for black-on-black pottery. She's credited with revitalizing pottery making at her New Mexico Pueblo. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Coming up on 6 minutes after 3, you're in tune with KTLO News in Juneau, Alaska. This is Juneau Afternoon. Pat Moore, your host, and my first guest is Kevin Araki, who is with the VTRC, which is the Alaska Vocational Resources Training Center.
That would be the Vocational Training and Resource Center.
Well, okay.
So, got that.
Well, I got it here one way and that way another, so you have to... I'm just breaking in here.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So, the VTRC is a kind of a hybrid educational setup, right? In other words,
I think you could say that. Yeah. It is a situation where we teach modular classes for the computer skills classes. We also teach some construction skills. Well, actually, we used to teach construction skills. So to generalize that a little bit more, some vocational skills such as CDL training and flagger training and some hazmat training. We've also offered some boiler and heater repair training. If you go way back into the history of VTRC, there was even some cuisine classes, and we've even offered some art classes at VTRC, but not anymore.
So now
primarily we're focusing on computer skills and CDL training.
And you have a facility over kind of by the hospital.
It's very close to the hospital. Right. It's right in back of the community council building. It's on Hospital Drive.
See, is there a restaurant right in the front end?
As a matter of fact, there's a fantastic restaurant. I recommend to all my friends, it's the best place to eat for lunch. It's called the Twin Lakes Cafe.
Yeah,
they serve fantastic food.
Just as you come in, and then there's parking like right out in front for people who are in your classes and like that.
Right.
Are most of your classes offered during the day, at night, all around the clock?
I would say 99% of the classes are offered during the day. We have had some QuickBooks classes offered during the evening and an occasional class that's offered on the weekends. But most of the classes are offered during a business day, somewhere between 8 and 5, and that's the way that we usually operate our classes.
And then you also have some online courses.
We have some online classes right now. We've just started that this year. This year we've got a couple of people sort of heading that up and facilitating the instruction as well as the courseware. Now, they're not teaching it in the sort of standard way that you understand teaching, but they're making sure that the people who are taking the online classes understand how to use the computer to get online to the classes, to the curriculum. And currently we're offering flagging classes online and also hazardous waste hazmat classes online. And there's an 8-hour class and a 40-hour class that's offered online.
Now, those are asynchronous classes, I think, is the term that they use to describe this,
right,
where you don't actually meet with the professor at each class. You go in and do your lessons, and the professor checks the material.
And the curriculum is online. The instructor helps the student if they're either falling behind, sort of. It's at your own pace. Mm-hmm. However, there's a certain expectation to get the classes done in a certain amount of time, and the instructors will help the students get caught up if they see them falling behind.
Kevin, has that broadened your reach? Have you picked up students from other areas?
Well, we have had a few students outside of Juneau taking the online classes, but primarily, I think probably because our promotional materials are focused in Juneau. Primarily, our student base is in Juneau, Alaska.
Did you say you were teaching a course for another community?
Right now, at this very moment, there's CDL classes, but that's face-to-face, hands-on CDL in uh-huh. Ketchikan and Prince of Wales Island. So certain classes can actually be mobile, and quite literally, they take the big rig on the ferry and ship it down there, and the people taking the CDL classes, commercial driver license classes, will actually be driving the big rig. And
so you have your own truck?
Yes, we do.
All right.
Actually, we've got, I think we've got two semis and one bus.
Ah.
So that's currently our state with the CDLs.
Well, will I have seen these out on the streets, or do you train
Well, if
in a...
you've ever seen a big rig with sort of a native design, it's sort of golden and black on the side. That's one of our trucks. There's a big red bus that's a VTRC bus. It doesn't have anything other, any unique markings other than the fact that it's big and red.
And it's probably not full of tourists most of the
time.
No, it's
not full of tourists at all. It's just probably one driver and one instructor, and that might be the way to identify it.
Are like the director of the
Oh, no.
What is your title?
My title is computer skills instructor.
Oh, okay.
Laird Jones is the manager of VTRC, and any of the big decisions, the administrative decisions, get passed through him.
Okay.
But I take care of the computer skills classes, and the computer skills classes consist of primarily Microsoft Office skills. So you've got Word and Excel and PowerPoint and Outlook and Access. But we also offer other Microsoft Office skills such as Visio and Project and some of the maybe lesser known Microsoft software. But we've also offered some Adobe classes such as Photoshop, and we've also offered InDesign, and then the web site building type of software is Dreamweaver.
Uh-huh.
We've offered several of those classes through the years.
So when you offer one of these classes, whom do you expect will take the course? Who are you thinking will come in for a Microsoft Office course?
Our primary student, I would say perhaps 90% of the students either come from the state of Alaska as already in the office, hoping to enhance their skills with any particular software, such as Excel.
Mm-hmm.
And Central Council employees, which includes all of Clinkett and Haida's departments, as well as Central Council's clients. And that is probably 95% of the people that come into VTRC to take my classes.
Mm-hmm.
I know that for the people taking John Lewis's CDL classes, there are quite a few people that quite literally come off the street and take the classes. Now, it's not a free class, but by any means, but they are looking for ways to improve their vocational skills. They think that maybe a commercial driver's license will allow them to provide a good salary for themselves and their family, and so mm-hmm. they take the CDL classes. And so it's not prime for the vocational classes. A lot of them are other than state workers or other than Central Council employees or clients.
So there's a, I imagine some people think because of the fact that you have a Native name associated with the thing and like that, that it's not open to everyone, but that's not really true.
That's absolutely, you're absolutely correct in thinking that it's open to everyone. And we, on all of our advertisements, we mentioned that right up at the top, open enrollment. It is not strictly based on Native preference. If you have the tuition to pay, you can get into our classes.
Okay.
One of the things, though, that is a nice little carryover is the fact that some of our Klinkenheide services very much support the Vocational Training and Resource Center. So if you happen to be a Tlingit or Haida or a Native client that is eligible for some of the services, it's very likely that some of your classes could be paid for in full.
Ah, okay. So great opportunities. How would someone find information about the VTRC?
Well, the web is full of information, and we have a website, www.vtrc.org is the website that we have. There's also flyers in various places that talk about the computer skills classes that are coming up or perhaps the CDL classes that are coming up. Those are our primary ways of dispersing information. And every so often in the Juneau Empire or the Capital City Weekly, you'll see an advertisement about VTRC classes.
So I think probably the big focus of VTRC is to help people get better employment, improve their operating skills and like that?
That's very true. It's to either help the unemployed get a job or to help the underemployed get a better job.
Okay, a little appropriate going out music, Kevin. Here we go. About 18 minutes after 3 o'clock, talking a couple of minutes ago there with Kevin Araki, who runs the computer training programs at the Alaska Vocational Tech and Resource Center. Give him a call if you're interested in improving your skills in that area. And the music introduces my next guest. Odette Edgar is here to talk to us about when we'll be hearing some of that music at the Barn Dance this Saturday, right?
That's right.
So what's up?
We have our summer New England Barn Dance coming up this Saturday, tomorrow night at St. Anne's Hall downtown. That is from 7:30 to 11. And this is a dance that we normally have on the evening of July 3rd, right before the fireworks, but timing didn't work out this year, so we've rescheduled it to July 21st.
So who's playing?
The band is Full Circle, and that is Greg Berger on fiddle and mandolin, his wife Mary DeSmit on guitar, and Doug Smith on piano. And I am the caller.
So what does the caller do?
Well, the caller...
On the theory that someone listening to us has never been to a New England barn
dance. Right, right. And there may be some people out there who haven't. The caller gets people going, dancing to the music, and then gets out of the way. That's kind of my job. I'm sort of a cross between a merrymaker and an MC and a traffic control person.
I'm seeing you now with your sign standing on the corner of the dance. Okay.
Right.
So square dancing, the moves are called. And,
right.
And before every move, the caller is guiding people into
doing
the square. That's not the same thing you're doing, right?
It is similar.
Oh, okay.
It comes out of the same tradition that goes back before. Many people, when they think of square dancing, they think of the Federation square dancing that people took lessons to go to, you know, and various phases of it and, you know, the fancy costumes. Well, this goes way back, way before that. People just wear street clothes. You don't need any previous lessons to go. We teach my job as caller is to get people moving, and so I teach people everything they need to know to do a dance.
Oh,
and so we always have people that come in that have never danced before, and they dance right along with folks that have a lot of years of experience. So it's a mix.
How hard would it be here on the radio right now for you to give me a sample? In other words, if I were going to dance and I've never done a New England barn dance before, what would I hear you tell me to do?
Okay, you might hear me say take hands in sets of four because people are dancing in long lines.
Okay.
Their partner's across from them, and so they're dancing in sets of four rather than in a square of eight. So I'd say circle left, swing your neighbor, face across the set, ladies chain over and back, long lines go forward and back, right and left through, and promenade across the set.
So to do this, I'm going to have to know at least some basic
what
moves.
Those things are.
I mean,
are.
I'm going to have to know what this chain thing is and like that. Okay. So how do I learn that?
Well, you know, every dance at 7:30, we do about a half an hour teaching session. And so that's the perfect time. You know, there's probably only about a dozen calls that I'll use all night long. You know, the ladies chain and the circle left and the star and long lines forward and back and hey for four. I mean, that's it. There's only a very limited number of calls. You do them over and over and over again, and after a while, you know, they become sort of halfway automatic, at least.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really, you know, it's just walking, basically, walking to the beat of the music, and which is pretty accessible for dancing.
Now, I may be about to spring on you here. I'm not sure a question, but there's a thing coming up called Camp Damp.
Oh, yes.
And you're involved in it, I know.
Yes.
So you must know what's happening here.
Right.
This happens out at the
Methodist
camp.
Yeah.
And this goes on when?
It's going to be August 3rd, 4th, and 5th, and it's a summer camp that we do. It's a weekend camp, and we have what's different about it is that we have a guest caller, this time Gordy Euler from Portland. And we have a band, a guest band, and these folks are called the Retrospecticals. They get an award for a really great name. And the fun thing about them is they are four kids that are probably in their mid-20s. And they have been playing together since high school and then on through college, and they just kept playing. And they're kids that grew up playing music and going to dance camps and going to festivals, and they are quite the hot band, and so we're very excited about them.
Now, when you introduced the group that's going to play for Saturday night's dance, you named the people who were there. Is there like a standard instrumentation for a New England barn dance band?
What
do we
is.
Expect to be?
Yeah, there's always there's a fiddle, and there's some sort of rhythmic backup like a guitar or a bass or a piano.
Uh-huh.
And there'll be other kinds of melody instruments, sometimes like a flute or accordion. But basically, you've got your fiddle and some sort of a backup music. But then there's bands like our own Mike Sicarius here at K2. He plays hammered dulcimer.
Yeah.
And so he's the melody. He's the main melody instrument in that. So, you know, it varies.
Different sound. Yeah.
And partly because we're dealing with folk music that comes from different parts of Northern Europe, from England, from Scotland, from Ireland, and then a whole uh, a whole history of music that comes from Northern Canada, from French Canada, and from Scottish Canada.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So it has a Celtic overtone.
Right. Okay. But it has evolved, and some of it is what we call old-time music. It's that Irish music that came with the immigrants and ended up in the Appalachian area and sort of settled into its own little groove, and that's a source of really wonderful dance music as well. Greg and Mary and Doug in Full Circle will probably play what I would call New England-type music, which is a combination of those various uh-huh. forms. Yeah. They're a very fine band. Great music. Fun music.
The group, I hate to keep bouncing back and forth between events here, but the group that's going to play at Camp Damp, you said, had started out as teenagers playing
right.
together. Playing this type of music?
This type of music.
Okay. So
yeah.
How long has Full Circle been an organization? Do you know?
Full Circle has been playing, I'm guessing, 7 or 8 years.
Okay.
And what's interesting about that band and their name and Greg and Mary is that they knew each other 40 years ago and played music together 40 years ago, and then various progressions through life,
yeah.
they've ended up at this point in their lives married and playing together again.
Uh-huh.
So that's partly the name for the band, Full Circle.
Is your position as caller tied more to a band, or do you go back and forth with different bands?
I can work with lots of bands.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and that's really, really one of the fun things about being a caller is you are there in front of the band, and the music is just flowing through you, and I'm just helping people to move to the music,
mm-hmm.
and it's a really, really fun place to be. It's very satisfying to do that.
Now, without the hazards of this next question, how long have you been calling?
I have been calling, let's see.
Since you were a child of...
You know, we have been doing our dances for 24 years, and I have been calling 24 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Did
yeah.
you start here?
I started here.
So yeah. did you stumble around at first?
I did, but you know, we got to start 24 years ago in 1988. It was we were a melding of the Folk Festival and the Juno International Folk Dancers,
uh-huh.
and they each gave us like $200 seed money, and they contributed the musicians, which was the Taku Gales, Greg McLaughlin, Liz Saya, and Andy Ferguson, and then some of the expertise of the folk dancers, the dance instructors, and so I came out of that. And I went off to a caller workshop school for a week and studied calling about 12 hours a day and got through my first
Ooh.
Years of mistakes
uh-huh.
in 1 week and came back ready to call. I had at least an inkling of what I was doing, and
yeah.
so it helped to have that little bit of training.
So where'd you go to school?
Oh, it was back in Augusta, West Virginia. It was
oh.
on a college campus, and
oh, okay.
There was a fellow who did a college workshop every week, and it was a very fun, intense
yeah.
week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you came back, and you felt like, I can do this.
Yeah, I could do this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I sort of had a clue. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, you make mistakes and learn along the way, but most of it's very fun.
All right. How
yeah.
many people are involved in New England barn dancing in June?
Well, let's see. You know, we have 5 bands in
okay.
town, and, of course, people are always shifting through those bands, but probably about five bands right now, and we have two of us that are regular callers,
mm-hmm.
and then another person who calls occasionally, and we probably have a core of maybe 25 or 30 people that come to every dance, and another 25 or 30 that show up sometime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it could be 50 people there if the regulars and the irregulars all show up at the same time.
Right.
Amazing.
You know, one of the fun things is that it's really a cross-generational kind of social event. And so people are welcome to bring kids. And children that are about ages eight or older are perfectly able to do this kind of dancing. I mean, if they're focused.
Yeah.
And so it's fun to have people of all ages there dancing.
Yeah. So tell us the times again for Saturday.
The times for Saturday are 7:30, and that's the starts with a half an hour of instruction, and then we'll go till 10:30 or 11.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, so Saturday night, the barn dance, where is it again?
It's at St. Anne's Parish Center, which
okay.
is downtown on 5th Avenue, 5th and Harris. It's the
okay.
big blue parish hall second floor. It's a really beautiful dance floor.
And if you've never done this before, show up at 7:30 for a little instruction. And the dance starts at 8. Is that?
About 7:30, whenever.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, pretty informal.
Okay, wonderful.
And let me just mention, the clothing is informal. Wear your summer clothes, flat-soled shoes. This is not a dressy event, but it's, you get warm, so it's nice to have if you wear a sweater, be able to take your sweater off. Women are lucky because they get to wear skirts.
Saturday night, we are looking at incredible weather for this. Maybe you'll move outside. I don't know.
Well,
they're saying the low's
not
in the 50, but that's overnight. I mean,
right,
by the time you do this dance, it'll probably still be up in the 60s. So
yeah,
it's
well,
be
we
a
can open windows
night
in this beautiful
yeah
hall, and so
okay
it's it'll be a delight.
Well, wonderful. Here, a little barn dance and music to go out with. Thank
all
you.
All right. Yeah. You're welcome.
New England barn dance music there, highlighting what we were just talking about with Odette Edgar. There's a New England barn dance Saturday evening starting at 7:30 at St. Anne's. So if you would like to slip on your dancing shoes, that's the thing to do. But there's another activity on Saturday, which my next guest is going to be talking to us about. Actually, I have two guests here. Patrick Van Poel and Guillermo Palma are here from Sequence Board Shop, and there's a skate competition, and evidently this goes on off and on all the time, right?
Yeah, we're going to do a summer contest series July 21st, which is tomorrow, August 11th, and September 1st.
Okay, and tell me what this competition or this thing, what's it involved?
Basically, it's just an event to kind of get all the kids hyped up for the summer because we have a pretty short summer, so we want to kind of maximize what we can do with it. So we decided on doing a summer contest series and to kind of keep the kids progressing from event to event, and it'll be pretty fun. My buddy Sonny, he had a contest last weekend, and we had a lot of people that showed up, and all the kids are pretty amped for this weekend, too, mm-hmm. So pretty excited for that.
So where's this held?
This is at the Pipeline Skate Park over by, I believe, Grandma's Restaurant.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
The Bed and Breakfast.
Right
thing.
There between it's the
right,
bus
yeah,
stop right next, and
yeah.
Grandma's.
Yeah, yeah it's
okay.
Right there. So.
Right. So what time does it start?
We're going to be setting up around 1, but we like to get the event going by 3, so... hopefully everything's rolling by then, and we're going to have some DJs there, which is going to be Blaine and Max Goldrich. They're going to be DJing, and so it'll be a lot of fun.
So now when you say setting up, besides the sound system, are you modifying the...
Well, kids are going to be able to practice, kind of warm up, get their legs all ready for the comp, and we're going to try to kick the comp off at 3, kind of get it started, but there'll be a lot of skating. There's going to be the Grand Coffee sponsoring it, too, so there's going to be some beverages there, and I think there's something to do with... they're doing all the proceeds going towards the skate park or something. I'm not sure what's going on with that. So,
from the grind.
Yeah, from the grind. Yeah, so they're going to be there. They're helping sponsor the event, which is pretty awesome, along with Red Bull. And we got a bunch of company sponsors that we supply in our store. Like all our brands that we supply in our store is going to help us out with the event also. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
So tell me a little about gear. What do you have in order to have fun with this?
Well, it's pretty simple. I mean, all you really need is a skateboard. It's kind of hard to skate in Juneau just because it rains a lot, because ideally you want to skate in dry places. We're pretty fortunate because we have a covered skate park, which is awesome. So we're holding the event there just because you never know if it's going to rain or not.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
And plus, all the ramps are there. We don't have to transport any ramps or anything like that. So
are those ramps movable?
The ones that are in the park, no. But to skateboard, really, all you need is just cement or a mini ramp or something like that. So, I mean, skateboarding, you can bring it anywhere, which is pretty awesome. So, yeah. But fortunately, we have a skate park, which is pretty awesome. So,
yeah. Who's the youngest? What's the youngest age you expect will show up for this?
It's pretty crazy. When I started skating here, there was not very many skaters, and there's a few of us that were probably like 14 to 19. You know, just were in high school. Now, I mean, I've seen kids as small as like 4, 5, six. Like, as soon as kids are running around, they're like on skateboards. So
okay, and then
awesome.
who are the senior citizens of this sport? What age are we looking at?
I got a buddy that's like pushing 40, and he's still killing it. Like, he's doing huge 180s on ramps. He's doing all the flip tricks. He's hanging with all the younger dudes. So, and I just turned 35. So, I mean, I'm still doing it. Yeah.
Yeah,
it hurts a little more when I fall, but. Yeah.
No, you just notice it more.
I notice it more, yeah.
It hurts the young ones, too, but they walk away from it because they don't know what it's going to be like in an hour.
For sure.
Yeah. So if somebody wants to come and watch this, is there a place to do that from? I mean, is there like you don't have like bleachers, right?
It's a pretty tight fit in the skate park, but like when people come, like we kind of encourage people to come up, stand on the ramps, kind of, you know, like there's platforms on all the ramps.
Oh, okay.
So people can kind of just sit around, they could stand up around all the ramps, or they could hang on the entryway. Some people are kind of intimidated because there's so much going on in there. But a lot of people hang out in the entryway, but it's always cool to get people to stand up on all the ramps around, because it's like a cooler feel for the guys skating, because it's just like all eyes on them and they just want to go out and show them what they got. So
like what's a really tough move?
You know, there's skateboarding is so crazy. I mean, there's all different levels of technical tricks. There's a few kids in town that just kill it. They're so amazing. Like, I mean, they're at professional level.
Well, when you say kill it, what are they doing? I mean, what is the professional thing that you're seeing them do?
Like, you'll see guys airing like 6 feet out of ramps, wall planning, jumping back in off like 9 foot, 10 foot quarters. Really technical tricks. People doing flip tricks to grinds and slides. It's just crazy. It's like hard to explain. I mean, guys just doing big airs, a lot of tech tricks, grinding rails, jumping gaps. You just got to see it, man. It's like really hard to explain.
you got to go.
Yeah, you got to go. You got to check it out. And skateboarding is kind of awesome because it's kind of mainstream now, where you can turn on television and see it.
Yeah.
And kids are at that level where it's like, or, I mean, it's just like when you're watching this stuff on TV, they're doing the same tricks or just doing a pretty awesome job with that. So
now, Sequence is a board shop.
It's a snowboard skateboard store. So
okay. We
do snow in the winter and we do skateboarding in the summer. So.
And then you sell, like, is there other gear that people have? I mean, pads and that sort of stuff. Do you do all that? Do people wear
that kind of thing? We do safety gear. It's recommended, but a lot of people don't really use safety gear unless they're skating really big ramps, like half pipes and stuff, like huge half pipes. But we sell everything because it's more of a lifestyle brand, or it's like lifestyled out now to where it's like, it's all the brands are that way. So it's like we have like clothing, pants, shirts, shoes, everything, hard goods, like skateboard stuff.
Yeah.
And on the snowboarding level, same deal. It's pretty awesome, yeah.
So it's kind
of like a lifestyle. So it's like
this thing goes at 1 o'clock on Saturday. You start setting up, and then you're expecting people will begin skating around 3?
Yeah.
And how long?
It's going to start winding down around 5, but we're going to be hanging out till 7.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
it's an all-day event.
Big deal. And there's going to be DJs, so there's music.
There'll be DJs by Blaine and Max Goldrich. They're going to be playing some music there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So Patrick Van Poole from Sequence Board Shop, big skate event coming up. Let's do a piece of appropriate music here, if we can. Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 20th of July, 2012. It's the birthday of the novelist Cormac McCarthy, 1933, born Providence, Rhode Island, as Charles McCarthy, Jr., best known as the author of the Border Trilogy, All the Pretty Horses, The Crossing, and Cities of the Plain. Richard Woodward, in the New York Review of Books, called him a man's novelist whose apocalyptic vision rarely focuses on women. McCarthy doesn't write about sex, love, or domestic issues. It was on this day, 1940, California opened its first freeway, the 101, the Pasadena Freeway, 8 miles long, connecting Pasadena to Los Angeles. It was intended to carry about 27,000 cars a day. Today, it carries about 122,000. Today is the day considered the birthday of Alexander the Great, born in Macedonia in 356 BC. Became emperor when he was 20 years old. He was undefeated in battle, and by the age of 30, he'd established the largest empire in the ancient world, stretching from the Adriatic Sea to the Indus River in what is now Pakistan. It's the birthday of the Italian poet Petrarch, Francesco Petrarca, born in Arezzo, Tuscany, 1304, who gave us the Petrarchan sonnet. And it's the birthday of the father of modern genetics, Gregor Mendel, born 1822 in Heinzendorf, Austria, now part of the Czech Republic. He was an Augustinian monk who raised peas in the monastery garden, and noticed that the plants had variations. Some had white flowers, some purple, some were tall, others not. He began crossing the plants that differed in only a single aspect, and over several generations of pea plants developed his theory of dominant and recessive traits. Here's a poem for today by Ingrid Wendt, entitled Porcupine at Dusk. Out of the bunch grass, out of the cheat grass, a bunch of grass waddles
my way. Quill tips bleached by winter 4 inches down. Crown of glory dark at the roots. A halo catching the sun's final song. No way could such steady oblivion possibly live up to legend. Whatever fear I might have had is gone, but still I stop short on my after-dinner walk. No collision course, if I can help it, thinking at first it's the wind nudging a path out of the field, or one of a covey of tumbleweed lost like those today on the freeway, racing ahead of my car that whole long drive here to the banks of the Snake. To friends so close, they know when to leave me alone. As though I were nowhere around, the porcupine shuffles the edge of the road, in 5 minutes crosses a distance I could have covered in less than one, and disappears at last into cattails and rushes. Sunset, a vespers of water birds, leaving me still unwilling to move. I am a sucker for scenes like this. The slowest beauty can rush me, and here I am, all of my defenses down. Porcupine at Dusk by Ingrid Wendt, from her collection Surgeon Fish, published by Word Tech Editions and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, iPad users can download the 3 most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012, at poetryfoundation.org. Written by Holly Vanderhaar, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Minutes before 4 o'clock, you're in tune with KTOO News. My next guest is coming to us by telephone from Haines, and it's Ross Silkman, who is the executive director of the Southeast Alaska State Fair. Hi, Ross.
Hey, Pat.
Hey, so we talked last Friday about all of the acts that are going to be on the main stage and the various other stages and all that sort of stuff. Today, our topic has to do with a set of contests. Is that correct?
Yeah, certainly so. We have various contests, you know, throughout the weekend, and so we just wanted to highlight a few for the folks down in Juneau so they knew what to expect and what to come up for. They start Thursday evening with the talent show. There's a $500 cash prize to the winner of the talent show, and then the winner and the runner-up are also entered in the State Fair up in Palmer's talent show as well. So the $500 cash prize is meant to help with travel to head up to Palmer to compete up in Palmer. So the contests really kick off Thursday evening with the talent show at 8:30 p.m. on the main stage here. This is the third annual talent show that we're running. And, you know, in years traditionally we get about 15 to 20 participants, everything from singing, songwriting, to physical acts, to stand-up comedy as well. So if you got talent, we'll take it. It's Thursday, 8:30 p.m. We do ask for pre-registration a few days in advance just to make sure that we got everyone slotted correctly for that.
When's that pre-registration close, Ross?
You know, I believe it closes early next week. I got to double-check on that, but I think it's Monday or Tuesday next week.
Okay, so there's time still.
Yes, there is still time to register for the talent show, absolutely. And again, $500 cash prize to the winner of that. And then on Friday, we've got a new competition. We're billing it as the Zombie Run. It's a 5K adventure race throughout the property, over obstacles, through the woods, that type of thing. The contestants will wear flags from a flag football, and there'll be zombies along the way that will, you know, run out and try to grab your flag as you're going. So it's an interactive 5K adventure race, which promises to be a lot of fun. There's a few zombie enthusiasts up in Haines here, and they're putting a lot of time and effort into this one. So, and it'll conclude, the National Guard is coming up with a 60-foot-long inflatable obstacle course, and so the run will actually conclude with that obstacle course.
A 60-foot-long inflatable obstacle course. This is going to be set up on the fairgrounds other than for the race, right?
Yes. So, and yeah. That will be, yes. And so that will stay up, you know, on the fairgrounds for people to use throughout the weekend. But
can I get a concept of what the obstacles look like?
So I think it's one of those where you have to run through, if they're inflatable bags, that type of thing. You climb the inflatable wall, you come down the inflatable slide. And, you know, there's a series of those types of obstacles.
So there's no inflatable live fire or anything like that.
But, yeah, but the zombie run will conclude with that.
Oh, okay.
And so, yeah, we're pretty excited about this one. It's a new event for us, and it's throughout the property. Again, it's kind of an adventure race, so it's not on a very traditional race course. You're running through the woods. You're going over obstacles, through different tire things, under stuff, and then all the while dodging the zombies that are trying to yank your flags.
It sounds like a perfect thing to do on a Saturday.
this one's Friday evening.
Oh, Friday
4
evening.
p.m.
Okay.
Yep. And people can register online, give us a call, or just show up. For the obstacle course zombie run.
So you'll take entrance right up to the first zombie, yeah. Right?
right up to the first zombie. You know, that one's Friday at 4. And that's again a new one for us. It's throughout the property here. Our traditional race is the Haynes Hustle, and that is Saturday morning. That's a 5K. A 10K and a trail half marathon, and so that one begins at 7:30 in the morning on Saturday morning with the trail half marathon, and then the 5K and the 10K start about a half an hour later in the morning. And again, with that one, you can register online or you can register, at your time of arrival. That one's a $10 registration fee, and it includes a T-shirt.
When is that one again?
That one's Saturday morning, and that's okay. The traditional one. This is the fifth year that the Haynes Hustle will be run. And, in the past, you know, we've seen this race grow over the course of the 5 years. And last year we had about, give or take, 70 or so participants in that. So that's an exciting one for Saturday morning.
Ross, I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you happen to know if the ferry comes in before the start of that the 5K and 10K?
It does not. The ferry comes in on Saturday at 11:30 a.m.
So if you're going to be in that, you got to come over on Friday's ferry.
That's correct. Yeah,
right.
And the ferry schedule, they're running their traditional ferries on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and that's one ferry a day. And it leaves Juneau in the morning. I think it's about 7 or 7:30 or so. And it gets up into Haynes at about 11:15, 11:30. And then it departs Haynes at 6 p.m., I believe, getting back down to Juneau at about 10:30, 11. On Sunday, the ferry is running the fast ferry. And so on Sunday, it's feasible to come up in the morning and return in the evening on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that fast ferry.
And you have a Sunday, I think, is a reduced price admission day as well?
That's correct. Yes.
Yeah.
So Sunday, we have a reduced admission rate for Sunday. Sunday, the hours run from noon to 4. We're really excited about the entertainment on Sunday this year. We have Kia Hartwood. She's out of Austin, Texas, and it's the Austin Lights Tour. A few other women are closing the fair for us. So Sunday we're very excited about here as well.
Who else is playing on Sunday?
On Sunday, let's see.
I know we weren't talking about music this time, but just out of curiosity.
Yep, we have a couple women singing gospel at 12:30. Mm-hmm. On Sunday, a gentleman out of Juneau, George Kuhar, is playing at 1.
Yeah.
And then a band named Bramble is playing at 2. And they're from, I think most recently, they were down around Utah. One of the guys has been working in Skagway over the last few years.
So good acts even on Sunday.
Even on Sunday, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we're very excited about this year.
Okay. Back to the Haynes Hustle for just a second.
Right.
The 5K and the 10K, are those street races or are they trail
races? Those are on the road.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Those are road races. And then the half marathon is a trail half marathon. It goes up Mount Riley for anybody familiar with Haynes.
Okay.
And it comes back down.
So it's a hill climb.
It's a hill climb. You're on the road for a little bit until you hit the trail, and then when you come off the trail, you're back on the road for the last, I think it's probably 3 miles back into the fair.
Okay, so we got a talent show, we got the zombie run, we have the Haynes Hustle.
Yep.
There must be more contests.
Oh, yes. Saturday, we're chock full on Saturday. We have the parade, starts at 11 on Saturday, and if you've ever been to the parade up here, it's a wonderful, you know, town parade through mm-hmm. Haynes. In the parade, there's the lovable dog contest. So people bring their dogs and walk them through the parade, and the dogs get judged at the end. So we have a lovable dog contest. On Saturday, we have a fiddle contest, singer-songwriter contest happening on Saturday. We have the logging show, probably the one single main attraction, you know, for a single event. And that's Saturday at 1 p.m. We have the Fisherman's Rodeo that follows the logging show, and that's at about 4:30 p.m. On Saturday. And again, the logging show, anybody can compete. You can register. They ask for registration at about noon or so on Saturday, so they get all the, you know, competitors lined up. But there's everything from hand bucking to power saw to axe throw to log rolling. And then the Fisherman's Rodeo is they've got everything. Again, net mending, crab toss, crab pot toss, see how far you can chuck a crab pot. There's several contests in that one as well. And so that's, you know, those are the main attractions we have on Saturday. And then the wearable art show kind of concludes our attraction or our events. And that's at 5:30 p.m. on the main stage. This is the first year we're kind of entering back into trying to get the wearable art show on as part of the fair. Mm-hmm. And we're excited. We build it at the, you know, the peak time on Saturday right there on the main stage. We've got a runway that will come out, and we've got right now probably about, I think last I checked it was between 6 to 10 entries, and so and they keep coming in. So we are excited about that one as well.
Is there a deadline for entry on that one?
Yes, there is, and that's, I believe that one's Monday, at least to get the form to us or call us, let us know it's coming, and send us the music, because the complication with that is trying to get all the music lined up for all the shows.
Now, let me be clear on this now. So on Monday, you have to have a person's music if they're doing the wearable art and the filled out form.
Yeah, or just at least a phone call with a heads up.
Yeah. Can people get that form online?
They can. They can do it online, or they can just give us a call.
So the Southeast Alaska State Fair has some kind of website that'll pop up if you
Google
something like that. Yeah.
Absolutely. If you get www.seekfair.org. You go to it. You go to the 2012 fair, and then there's a competition events page, and you'll be able to pull up all that stuff right there.
Right. Okay. So, any other contests? I got them all. I got the talent show. I got the zombie run. I got the Haynes hustle. I got parade. Lovable dog in the middle of that. Fiddle sing singer songwriter. The logging show. Fisherman's rodeo. The wearable art Saturday night.
Yep. Yeah. And then on Sunday as well, we're doing Little League games for the kids. So if people come up with the families and they want to, you know, play ball in the afternoon, the Little League field is on the property. And so we do a Little League game there. We try to do a diaper derby for the little ones on Sunday morning, you know, or early Sunday afternoon, about 1 p.m. We run a diaper derby for the crawlers and then for the toddlers who are just learning to walk.
Mm-hmm.
And that one's always a real fun one too, to watch the kids eat there. So yeah.
This is going to be an amazing fair.
Yeah, no, we're really excited. We've ordered up the sun. We talked about it. We're getting it this week.
Hey.
So.
Yeah, it's practicing.
Right. It needs its practice.
Yeah, it does. In Southeast Alaska, the sun needs to practice to shine so that it's ready when we need it. Okay, we got to run out of this. So let's quickly now, if people want to go to the fair, it starts on?
Starts on Thursday. We're open Thursday at noon. And, you know, and it just depends when it closes on the music, but typically it'll go from about noon till 11 or 12 at night, depending on the closing act. And then on Saturday, it opens at 11:30 a.m. And then Sunday, it goes from noon to 4, and we close down at 4 on Sunday.
All right. Ross Silkman, Executive Director of the Southeast Alaska State Fair in Haynes. We'll probably be talking to you again before the festivities happen. It's always good to talk to Haynes. You're getting our son, right, the same one we got over here?
Yes.
Amazing.
Yeah, we have the Little League regional tournament happening up here right now.
All right.
And we've had sunshine for the last few days, so it's been great.
Friday and Saturday night, you got a group playing up there called the Whiskey Dicks. Here's a sample.
All right. Thanks, Pat.
It's festival time, and everybody's getting ready. They're hanging up the signs. They're checking all the lines. The campgrounds are all filling up for festival time. Hey, I don't know who's playing. Don't know where I'm staying. I'll buy you a dozen beers if you give me a ride. Let's hit the liquor store. Buy all we can afford. All I need is liquor, love, and music to survive. Hey!
sort of a combination of klezmer and a bunch of other stuff in there. And this is Whiskey Dicks, and they'll be playing Friday, Saturday night at the Southeast Alaska State Fair, which has a plethora of contests that you can dive into. You're in tune with KTOO Juno. We broadcast here on 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We're also heard on translators throughout the area. K276 AF 103.1 in the Valley and Auk Bay, Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO 101.7, Gustavus K201 AM 88.1, K220 BT Huna 91.9 in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. KTOO is on K210 AS 89.9.